This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. When Congress broke for recess Friday, one question was left lingering above the nation's capital. Will Democrats and Republicans ever come to an agreement on whether or not to extend emergency unemployment benefits?
Listen, when the White House chief of staff called me 1 week before the recess and first brought this issue up of extended unemployment benefits, I made clear that we would consider extending emergency unemployment benefits if it was paid for and if there were provisions that we could agree to that would get our economy moving again and put the American people back to work.
This is typical for Republican members of Congress. Not Republicans, but Republican members of Congress. The vast majority of American people believe that unemployment benefits should be extended. Never with unemployment like this have we ever even considered not extending them.
That's House Speaker John Boehner on NBC, followed by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid on CBS. Sounds to me like the answer is not likely. While the jobs report shows signs of improvement for the job market, there are still many Americans struggling to get by without work, and now without a safety net. Today, we're taking a closer look at the unemployment debate. We'll weigh the pros and cons of extending unemployment benefits, both on a state and national level. Later, we'll hear from a Connecticut resident about his firsthand experiences with long-term unemployment. And we want to hear from you. Have you been impacted by these benefit cuts? What are your experiences with the job search? Call us at 860-275-7266. Again, our phone number is 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org or tweet us at wherewelive. Joining us first is Alex Seitzwald, who's political correspondent for the National Journal, joins us to talk about some of the political ramifications here. And Alex, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So this deadlock seems like one of many deadlocks that we've seen in Congress. So in that way, not all that dissimilar. What's a little bit different about this? Maybe you can explain why exactly Republicans and Democrats can't come to some sort of an agreement on unemployment benefits.
Yeah, that's right. It is pretty typical. You have Democrats on one hand who want to continue these emergency unemployment extensions that were put in place at the height of the recession, and you have Republicans worried about the deficit, worried about spending billions of dollars on these, and they're saying they don't want to. So on that level, it's very similar to many other debates we've had in Washington. What's a little bit unusual about this is that those emergency benefits were actually signed into law by George W. Bush just before President Obama came in. They've had pretty strong bipartisan support as the economy has continued to have a pretty tepid recovery. Unemployment rate is still pretty high. They've been renewed several times since then. So this is the first time that Republicans have really taken a strong stance, and it looks like they are going to block it entirely. There were two votes last week in the Senate. Both of them failed, and that doesn't even take into account the Republican-controlled House, which would be much more difficult.
So just to make this a little bit clearer for people, what you're saying is this isn't one of those black and white issues like, say, I don't know, gun control, where Republicans line up on one side and Democrats always line up on the other side. This is one in which there's been a lot of ideological similarities, at least until now.
That's right. I mean, Republicans are generally less sympathetic to the safety net, to the welfare state, but unemployment benefits have been something that they've supported in the past. I mean, these are things that we all pay into if, you know, when you have a job. And then they're supposed to be there for when you don't have a job to kind of keep you along until you can find a new job. So it's something that supports the kind of Republican notions of self-sufficiency. It just gives you a small safety net until you can find a new job. But these extended benefits are for people who have been out of work for a long, long time, over 27 weeks, sometimes up to 99 weeks. So it's people who have been out of work for a long time, and you're starting to see kind of rhetoric about, you know, moochers or people who would rather stay on these extended unemployment benefits than find a new job. But there are several Republicans who support this in the Senate, so it's a little bit of bipartisan support, but it's kind of falling along. It's moving increasingly into the kind of typical partisan lines.
But of course, one of the things that's very interesting in an article that you wrote suggests that both Democrats and Republicans coming into this election year could benefit from these unemployment benefits not being extended. It's kind of a cynical view, but it might be the right one. Tell us a bit more about that.
That's right. Unfortunately, I think cynicism is, you know, often warranted here in Washington. One thing we know for sure about what happens when these extended unemployment benefits run out, and they did run out on December 28th, so we're already after their expiration, we know pretty for certain that the unemployment rate will drop, and there are two possible explanations for that. One is the Republican idea that, you know, these people who have been collecting benefits will finally get off the couch and go find a job. And the other idea has to do with the way the government calculates unemployment benefits. Basically, a lot of these people will just drop out of the workforce entirely. And so if you have fewer people who are looking for jobs overall, then your unemployment rate is going to drop. You know, there's two numbers, people who are employed over the number of people who are looking for jobs. Either one of those will affect the unemployment rate. So either way, the unemployment rate is probably going to drop. And that's good for Republicans because they can say, look, this is proof of our notion that, you know, if you cut off benefits, people will take a stand and support themselves. And for Democrats, you know, who are in charge, who control the White House, who control the Senate, they can say, look, the economy is improving. Heading into the 2014 election, the economy is still by far the most important issue on voters' minds, and a rapidly dropping unemployment rate would be a big boost for them. So, of course, the big problem here is that the unemployed, these long-term unemployed who lose their benefits, they're the ones who really lose. The economy loses because it's not good for all of us when we have these long-term unemployed people, but both parties in Washington will win.
We'll be talking a bit more about the impacts on the economy and what the realities of that are in just a moment. 860-275-7266. If you want to join us, especially with your stories of long-term unemployment, Robin's on the line from North Haven. Hi there, Robin. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I lost my job April before the big crash. Which was 2008, I guess.
Yeah.
So, at the time, there was still an abundance of jobs to apply for, and I aggressively looked for a job. By September, there was nothing left, and I still hadn't found a job. And I actually worked through, I collected through numerous extensions, finally found a job after 72 weeks. It was an hour from my home. I was a single mom with four kids, and ultimately, I couldn't sustain the working. And I went back on unemployment again.
So, and how long have you been on unemployment now?
My unemployment ended a year and a half ago, so I'm not on any extensions or any unemployment.
So tell us about the job search at this point, because one of the things we're talking about is the reality of these numbers, Robin, whether or not people are looking for work, whether or not they're actually in the job market or all. What's your status right now?
Even talking about it sets my teeth on edge, because every week I look for a job, every week of every year that I've been unemployed. And I've applied to jobs that I had no chance of getting, but they were so beneath my education and experience that I thought perhaps they would take anybody. They don't call me back for jobs that I'm completely qualified for, jobs that I had done in the past. And I have a huge student loan for a master's degree in public administration. And the only thing that my education has brought me in this economy is debt.
Robin, I thank you so much, first of all, for your phone call. And I wish you the very best of luck in finding some work and getting this situation resolved. I do appreciate you taking some time today.
Keep the show going. It's a great show.
Thank you very much. And Alex, the voice of Robin there is the voice of, I think, a lot of people who are calling from not just around Connecticut, but around the country. They're looking at this saying, look, for one reason or another, it's not a cookie cutter solution here. I can't find work and I need to figure out something. And when these unemployment benefits go away, you know, there's nothing for me to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think Robin is typical of a lot of people. I mean, the fact here is that there are three times, there are three more people looking for jobs than there are job openings. There just simply aren't enough job openings out there right now. So no matter how hard you're trying, no matter how hard you're looking, it can be very difficult to find a job. And in certain areas, some regions where the economy is even worse off than it is nationally, those numbers are even worse. And there's also an element, a very important element here, of employer discrimination. Once you've been out of work for a long time, employers discriminate very heavily against you. The Boston Fed sent out a bunch of fictitious resumes and tweaked only the amount of time that people have been out of work, and they found tremendous discrimination for people who have been out of work for more than 6 months. And once you've been out of work for more than 27 weeks, you have a 12% chance of getting a job. So it becomes really, really hard. And I think this leads to, you know, we have a long-term unemployment problem here. These benefits were the only lifeline for them, but we have a bigger problem that needs to be addressed more holistically. But certainly cutting off the benefits isn't going to help that.
We talked to Ofer Sharon from the MIT School of Management about long-term unemployment. He talks about discrimination in the hiring process. He talked to our producer, Lydia Brown.
The idea is someone who is 6 months unemployed or longer, regardless of their age or gender, will be discriminated against simply because of that fact that they've been unemployed. And this is based on some research where identical resumes have been sent to employers in research done by Rand Guyon, where the only variation is the duration of unemployment and the prior experience being a match for the position being posted. And that we see that people with no relevant prior experience are much more likely to get a callback who have short-term unemployment than people who have relevant experience but are long-term unemployed.
Sharon is currently researching ways to improve the rate at which the long-term unemployed find jobs. In the meantime, he says there is a way for job hunters to avoid potential discrimination: networking.
This is the way typically to get around rigid screenings based on all factors, including duration of unemployment. We know that networking for people who have been long-term unemployed is more difficult than for people who are currently working or recently laid off. So we have to look more closely about what forms of networking with who and how. But I do suspect that the answer will be in some form of using social networks as a way to get around employer bias until we can deal with the bias in a more structural way.
That's Ofer Sharon from the MIT Sloan School of Management talking to our Lydia Brown, talking about discrimination in the workforce for the long-term unemployed. We want to hear your stories of long-term unemployment at 860-275-7266. We're also talking with Alex Seitzwald, who is a political reporter for the National Journal. Stand by for a moment, Alex, and I want to bring in Kurt Mittman, who is a PhD candidate in the Department of Economics at the University of Pennsylvania. He co-authored a paper called Unemployment Benefits and Unemployment in the Great Recession, The Role of Macro Effects. Kurt, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
So first of all, explain exactly what it is you are looking at here. What's your study about?
So what we wanted to look at is basically the effect on job creation, employment, and unemployment of extending unemployment benefits in the Great Recession. So what we're really interested in looking at is, you know, when benefits are extended, how does that affect employers' decisions to create jobs? And then kind of through that channel of employers' decisions to create jobs, how does that feed through into kind of employment rates, the unemployment rate, and also the wages that people get? So we kind of looked at variation in the weeks of benefits that were available for people in different states across the United States during the Great Recession, and use that to kind of identify the effects of extending these benefits on kind of all of these labor market variables, and kind of most importantly, looking at the job creation channel.
Okay, so we all want to create jobs, but we do want to take care of the folks who haven't had jobs for a long time. What did you find, Kurt?
So what we found is that extending the unemployment benefits had serious negative effects on the labor market, so that they had a very significant increase in the unemployment rate, a huge negative effect on job creation on employment, so that essentially these extensions caused a huge decrease in the number of jobs that were created, and that because of that, that fed into having a much higher unemployment rate and a much lower rate of employment than we would have had otherwise.
So be specific. Why exactly would extending unemployment benefits to those who haven't had jobs for a long time actually suppress the ability of the economy to create jobs?
So what we find is that the channel is that by giving people additional weeks of benefits, that essentially puts upward pressure on the equilibrium wage, so the wage that they'd have to get paid from employers. Now, if employers have to pay workers kind of a higher wage, kind of holding everything else equal, that's going to reduce the profits that they can make from creating a job. And if there's kind of fewer profits that can be created from opening up a job, then fewer employers are going to open up jobs, and then we're going to have less employment. So it's not a story of, you know, that if we give people additional weeks of benefits, they're going to be lazy, they're going to sit at home. It's kind of not that story at all. It's that, you know, by giving people these additional weeks of benefits, it's going to put kind of upward pressure on wages, and it's going to squeeze profits and make it harder for employers to, you know, invest in additional machines to create jobs because there's less that they can get from doing so.
So but the practical applications of these sorts of policies, though, maybe are found in our caller earlier, Robin, who had unemployment benefits extended for some time. Now she doesn't have unemployment benefits anymore. She's got four kids to feed. She's looking for a job. She can't find a job. I guess one question a lot of people would have for you, Kurt, is what do we do for Robin? How exactly do we make it so that Robin and others who have been unemployed for a very long time can get a job, can get back to work?
Well, I think, you know, what I picked up most on from Robin's call was she said there are no jobs out there. I mean, that's what rung with me. And the kind of that is the heart of what we find in our study, is that expending these benefits just cause vacancy and job creation to go way down. And that, you know, if the benefits had been extended, we find that there would have been, you know, significantly higher job creation, and that kind of through more jobs being created, she hopefully would have, you know, been able to find a job much faster. Obviously, there's a trade-off because, you know, we do want to provide people insurance and give them money to, you know, help them when they're out of not being able to find a job. But kind of from a social and, you know, from a personal aspect, it'd be much better for society to get her back into a job as quickly as possible instead of prolonging the period of unemployment at kind of a lower level of benefits. I mean, I think it is a difficult trade-off, especially for someone in her case, but how can we measure this trade-off between providing insurance but also kind of getting people back to being productive in jobs as quickly as possible? And then kind of what we find is that in terms of the trade-off is that, you know, extending these benefits has a much more harmful effect in terms of getting people back into employment as opposed to providing them insurance in terms of giving them money when they're unemployed.
Alex Seitz-Wald, you've been listening in, and earlier you suggested that a number of economists nationwide have said extending these unemployment benefits actually would be a good thing for the economy. You've heard what Kurt Mittman just said. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I will not protest to have a degree or expertise in economics, but the argument that I've heard from other economists that I've spoken to is that by giving these people benefits, you know, you're putting cash in their wallet. They can go out to the grocery store and spend money. They can pay their rent. They can pay their utility bill, and it keeps the economy moving and creates a kind of multiplier effect. But and on the alternative, some people who drop out are going to have to depend on food banks or food stamps or other government assistance that they otherwise would not, you know, have to, and maybe discourage them from getting back into the workforce in the long term. So, you know, I think there's a strong argument either way. And I know the old economist joke, if you ask 100 economists, you know, the same question, you'll get 100 different answers. So I think there's more research probably to be done here.
And we're going to be hearing from another local economist coming up in just a moment. Kurt Mittman, I just want to ask you, though, is there something in your research that looks at that point that Alex just talked about? A number of people, economists that I've spoken to about this issue, say, look, if you don't have some money going into the economy, you don't have some way of people who've been long-term unemployed at least spending a little bit of money, there are deleterious effects to the economy. Even if the job creation part of it isn't there, you're still not generating economic activity. Is there something to that, Kurt?
So in the way that our analysis works is that we're kind of looking at the differences between adjacent counties across state borders. So like we look at, you know, Hartford compared to Springfield in Massachusetts. And so to the extent that these benefits are providing a stimulus to the local economy, you know, we control for that stimulative effect. So we find kind of this negative effect on job creation is even after taking into account kind of the local stimulus that's fed into it. Obviously, there could be some national stimulus because people spend money not just in, you know, paying their rent in their local area. But if you look at kind of estimates from the Congressional Budget Office, you know, the magnitude that they estimate of that stimulative effect is about an order of magnitude smaller than the negative effects that we estimate in our paper. So, I mean, I think that there is potentially a stimulative channel there, but it seems to be dwarfed by the negative disincentive channel that we find.
Alex Seitz-Wald, before I let you go, you know, the argument that Kurt is making, and he said this very, very clearly, it's not an argument that people who are on long-term unemployment are on the take somehow, that they're mooching and that they're not trying to find work. It's actually a very substantive economic argument. Do you see any hope that Washington actually begins to have a conversation on this level about the actual economic impacts, pro and con, of this? Or is it just going to be, frankly, about name-calling and more of the same Washington stuff?
You know, unfortunately, I think it's going to be it's only going to get more name-calling-y, if you will. Congress is on recess this week, and when they come back, Senate Democrats have vowed to bring this up again. But it's almost certainly going to fail. So what that means is it's no longer become a bill that they actually hope to pass, but it's become, you know, purely a messaging bill. So they hope to use this so that when Republicans strike it down, they'll put them on the record, and they can write press releases saying, look at these heartless Republicans not extending these benefits. So I think, you know, that's basically the terrain that it's in for now, unfortunately.
Alex Seitz-Wald is a political writer for the National Journal. You can read his story about how both Democrats and Republicans can potentially gain from these lower unemployment figures that come from not extending unemployment benefits. It's one of those stories about Washington that makes you want to just beat your head against the wall. Alex, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be bringing into the conversation another economist, Nick Perna from Webster Bank, and we're also going to be getting to your phone calls. We'd like to hear your story about long-term unemployment and long-term unemployment benefits. 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're talking about long-term unemployment. We've been looking at the politics and some of the economics as well. We're taking your calls at 860-275-7266. In just a moment, we're going to be finding out more about the Connecticut job market. But let's hear from some people in the Connecticut job market right now. Sean's in New Haven. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What's up?
I wanted to try to just clarify one point in that unemployment, employees don't actually pay into unemployment. More money is paid into unemployment as an employee works, but it's the employer that's actually, it's not coming out of the employee's paycheck or, you know, wages. And I guess one thing I would like to see is if, you know, for long-term benefits, is it maybe that employees wind up paying in a little bit as well instead of just employers. I mean, I'm in favor of extending long-term benefits, but I don't like the sound of skin in the game idea, but what wound up happening this past year is there was a special assessment, and every employer, regardless of how many people they laid off or didn't lay off, you know, was hit with a bill for hundreds of dollars to kind of pay for that extension of benefits. So either, I guess my thought is if it either came out of actually a tax fund and didn't have to be paid back by, say, only employers, I guess if the cost was spread out a little further,
well, I
include
think
include employees, it might be a better idea.
Well, one thing to ask though, Sean, is, I mean, don't employers essentially take money out by paying workers what they can pay them, factoring in the fact that they're going to be having to pay into unemployment benefits, essentially keeping wages down in order to cover the cost?
Right. And in my case, it makes more sense for me to keep somebody on and get, you know, instead of having to pay someone's unemployment benefits, if I know I'm going to have a position for them in the near future, it would make sense to continue paying them and, you know, get less work out of them if less work was available than that, to lay them off and have to pay and receive nothing from the, you know, from the payment, I guess.
Exactly. Sean, thank you very much for your phone call. Yeah. And if you want to join us at 860-275-7266, hang on for a moment because we want to get to some more of your calls. But we do want to bring in our friend Nick Perna, who's economic advisor to Webster Bank, who's joined us in the program before. Nick, good to speak with you again.
John, how are you?
Doing quite well. So tell us, how's Connecticut doing right now? We hear about the overall unemployment picture in America. We hear about the lack of an extension for these unemployment benefits, an awful lot of people out of work, a lot of people dropping out of the job market. How does Connecticut look specifically?
John, allow me. I've been sitting here chomping at the bit.
I thought you might be.
Absolutely fascinating conversation. And I just want to make two quick comments.
Yeah.
One of them is that I'm old enough to remember that this debate goes back so far. During his reelection campaign, George Herbert Walker Bush, when he was going for reelection, actually vetoed extended unemployment benefits proposals three times. Okay. And I believe that this was instrumental in his getting defeated, but that's neither here nor there. But it's a long history of being a contentious issue. The second thing is that I found the Kurtz research very interesting. And, you know, as a PhD in economics, I'm very envious of having something this timely, all right? But I think one of the things he said is terribly important. He said that the way these jobs are destroyed by extending unemployment benefit is by keeping wages up. So what he's saying is if you didn't have them, wages would fall. So what you'd be doing is substituting one problem for another,
mm-hmm.
okay? It would make wages more flexible, but my guess is not simply for the people who are long-term unemployed who got jobs, but it would also put downward pressure on the wages of people who had jobs already. So it's a really important thing to look into.
And does that get back, Nick, to my earlier question then about money that's available to go into
sure.
the economy, right? It's not just about wages and what employers can do, but the folks who have or have not money are going to either spend or not spend on a whole bunch of things.
Exactly. It affects consumer confidence. It affects a lot of things. And as I recall, the Congressional Budget Office did rankings of where do you get your most bang per buck for government spending programs. And in the short run, it was unemployment benefits and things like that, okay, because 100% of it got spent. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in. But now you want me to talk about Connecticut?
I would love for you to talk about Connecticut because we're going to get some calls from people in Connecticut right now who are either looking for work or have some ideas about this. So what do you think, Nick?
Sure. First of all, I love to quote the old Mark Twain thing about the reports of my demise are premature and exaggerated. When he heard about his obituary, but how's Connecticut doing? Okay. But we're not dead in the water, and we're not declining. That's important. We've done a lousy job long term of creating jobs. We've done a not half bad job the last year or so. In fact, most people are surprised when I say in 2013 we generated about 15,000 net new jobs in this state. Okay. I think, is that a lot? Well, the national economy grew jobs by about 1.7% last year, and Connecticut by about 1%. So you can see there's a big gap between us. The second thing is that if you look at what percentage of jobs that were lost during the recession, we've regained, it's about 50% in Connecticut. For the national economy, I think it's closer to 80 or 85%. So or another way of looking at it, that if we grow the way the consensus forecast has, another, 15,000 jobs this year and maybe 20 or 25,000 jobs next year, it's still going to take us till 2016 or thereabouts to get back to where we were in 2008, whereas the national economy should be back to 2008 sometime this year. So you can see that we're growing, but not growing fast enough. And the unemployment rate, which has come down largely because of a decline in the labor force. But we can talk about that if you want to.
And we're going
to
get to some phone calls right now about this at 860-275-7266. So let's hear from Richard, who's calling from East Hartford today. Hi, Richard. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing well. What's up?
I live in East Hartford, Connecticut. I've been unemployed for like a year now, a year and a month. And I've been looking for a job, but it just makes – and I was dependent on that unemployment. And it just makes me sick where they can't decide what to do, the Congress people in Washington. And they help us out a little. We don't ask for much, and they seem like they don't care.
Richard, thank you very much for your phone call. And Nick Perna, you hear Richard here. He says, it sounds like they don't care all that much. They don't need a whole lot of help. They just need a little bit of help. What's your take on this? I mean, in order to help out Richard and others, Robin, who called earlier, does Congress need to figure this out and extend unemployment benefits for people who've been out of work for a very long time?
It's not simply an economic argument, because we can go be all over the place on it. It's really a fairness argument, okay, an equity argument. Is it fair in a very slow recovery with still very high unemployment, especially high long-term unemployment, is it fair to cut people loose at this time when the job market is still very, 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 very thin? In my value system, the answer to that is no. And in fact, in my value system, I'm not speaking for Webster Bank or for the business community. I'm talking for Nick Perna. And in my value system, I'd rather make sure that people who are deserving of it get enough to survive on, even if that means that there are people who don't deserve it that get it, because it's so difficult to separate the two out. Plus, what we end up doing is we come down. First of all, the Congress is in no small way responsible for a lot of the unemployment. If we'd had an appropriate set of economic policies going back to 2009, we could be probably farther along at this point. If we didn't have these totally ridiculous debates over the debt ceiling and stuff like that that generated a lot of anxiety and slowed the economic growth of the economy,
yeah.
If we didn't have the sequester.
I was going to say, between sequesters and government shutdowns, it seems as though Congress is now arguing whether or not to extend unemployment benefits to cover the people whose jobs were lost because of exactly what they did.
You know, John, you said it much more succinctly than that. That's why you do what you do and I do what I do. But, you know, I think that's part of it. And I think we are in a very different situation. This is not, your father's recession, as it were. It's not the one where, you know, we had inventory decumulation, yada, 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 and we'd come out quickly. No, this is the result of a major financial debacle. And history tells us that it takes a long time to get out. And the problem with it taking a long time is that the longer it takes, the more stale, for want of a better word, the skills get of the people that are unemployed.
Boy, and that's actually in the next segment of the program, we're going to be talking a little bit more about this. And I think it's an important part of our conversation as we talk about growing the economy in 21st century job skills. At the end of the day, if you've been out of work for a couple of years, there's a chance that a lot of things are passing you by. We want to get to a few more phone calls with Nick Perna, who's an economic advisor to Webster Bank. Jim's in Middletown. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Colin.
Yeah.
My original point was, yes, if the effect of extending unemployment benefits is to drive up the wages of the jobs that are created, then we're actually in a system that only asks us to create jobs that pay less than benefits. That at the end of the day, the jobs that are created aren't really worth having because they pay less than unemployment does, since that's the only thing that the market's willing to do. But the larger picture, just to draw back, since that point was raised by your latest caller,
yeah,
it seems like it's a systemic. All the data is pointing toward a systemic problem where we've created an economy where jobs that pay well we're unwilling to have. We don't want those jobs. And it's clear if you look at even what's available to laymen in the way of data, that there's money out there, that the stock market continues to go up, that the disparity in wealth continues to rise. So there's wealth there, but the system isn't interested in compensating labor for labor.
Well, first of all, Jim, thank you very much for the phone call. And we still have Kurt Mittman here from Penn, and I know you've been listening in, Kurt. I'm wondering, before I let you go, if you could just address that question. We've been talking a little bit here about whether or not creating jobs versus good-paying jobs, jobs with higher wages, actually makes some sense. What do you say to what Jim just had to say?
Well, you know, I think it is true that there are, you know, a lot of firms right now that are flush, that they're big profits. But what's important to realize is that, you know, if you look at the data, historically in the United States, the net drivers of job creation are small and young firms. So they're not, you know, the Apples or the GEs, kind of the big firms now that you hear about that have, you know, hundreds of billions of cash at hand. It's the small firms that, you know, aren't flush right now that are the ones that are the net creators of jobs. And so they're the ones that are, you know, at the margin that are going to be, you know, squeezed by these increases of benefits that's going to put the upward pressure on the wage, that's going to make it harder for them to grow employment in the United States. And so I think that, you know, kind of focusing on, you know, maybe what we've kind of heard about big corporate profits, you know, those aren't, you know, historically the big creators of jobs. It's the small firms, and they aren't as flush in terms of their perspective.
Nick Perna, quickly, before we have to take a break, maybe a quick response to that. I mean, we've been working with you folks at Webster Bank on the Small Business Project for years, and we've been hearing this, that small employers are really the drivers of economic growth. They can't afford the high wages. They don't have all the wealth that our caller Jim was saying is out there in the market. What do you say, Nick?
Well, you know, I think that's a really important point, but I think that we're picking only one portion of what affects the viability of small businesses. And in the state of Connecticut, I think that the tax structure, regulation, and all the rest are at least as important, probably even far more important than debates we have over whether or not extending unemployment benefits raises costs or whether raising the minimum wage. You know, Connecticut, and I've said this publicly any number of times, has, in meeting its egregious budget deficits, with something we're going to have to do again in a couple of years, I find out, in doing this has made the environment less and less competitive vis-a-vis other states. Less and less competitive means it gets more and more expensive to do things here in the state of Connecticut. So I think if that's addressed, then, you know, maybe there'll be a lot more room for extending unemployment benefits than there is right now. Okay.
We're going to take a break. I want to thank Kurt Mittman, who's a PhD student at the Department of Economics at the University of Pennsylvania. He co-authored a paper called Unemployment Benefits and Unemployment in the Great Recession, The Role of Macro Effects. We'll have links on our website at WNPR.org. Kurt, thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
I also want to thank Nick Perna. Hey, Nick, can you stick around with us for a couple more minutes?
Yes, sure.
Okay, we're going to take some more phone calls from you at 860-275-7266. We're trying to figure out the situation about long-term unemployment in Connecticut and America. And if you have a story, join us now where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, it's Wednesday, which means our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. Colin McEnroe will join me as always, along with a panel of reporters and political observers to recap all the week's news from throughout the state. There's going to be a snowstorm, so we should have a lot of fun. It's a bombogenesis edition of The Wheelhouse on the next Where We Live. Today, we're talking about long-term unemployment, how it's affecting Connecticut residents. Knowing that Washington isn't probably going to do much about long-term unemployment benefits, what does it mean to you? 860-275-7266. We're going to get to a few quick phone calls here. Chris is in Avon. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I was relatively recently unemployed, but I could see it coming down the pike, so I've been job searching for a while. I have a master's degree looking in the legal field, and you know, I'm puzzled by the MIT economist's argument that unemployment benefits extension somehow depresses jobs. You know, my experience is, first of all, that there's age discrimination. There's also just more people out there looking for jobs than there are jobs, and I don't see how unemployment is really going to benefits is going to change that. You know, it just seems like a very dry argument, and, you know, it drives me crazy that talking about Washington being very cynical. You know, we're talking about people here who really sincerely want to contribute to the economy, have skills that they would like to be able to use. And so I'd like to see more practical, you know, how are we creating jobs? How can we get the banks to actually lend? We bail them out. How come they aren't lending more to businesses to help them expand? And why is, say, the government of Connecticut bailing out these businesses that weren't necessarily going to move out of state anyway, but they're throwing money at them?
Chris, first of all, thank you very much, because you're raising a lot of questions, actually one of which I want to put to Nick Perna from Webster Bank right now. Thank you very much, and success to you, hopefully, coming on the job search here. Nick Perna, now we know we're hearing from Chris, and we've been hearing from a lot of people. One of the things that she raises is, look, this has a lot to do with not just employers. It has to do with banks. It has to do with lending. Do you think that money is more available than it used to be? Just quickly to answer that particular point that she's making, we've been worried about whether or not banks are helping small businesses create jobs or whether or not it's still a tight time out there.
Well, you know, I mean, it's not the big party it was 10 years ago or 6 years ago,
yeah.
Okay? But there is money available. There's plenty of Small Business Administration money. I think Webster's one of the biggest lenders in the small business area. But you know, and interest rates are moderate. Sure, qualifications are fairly high, but that's necessary after what we went through. I think that it's sort of like build it and they will come. The lending will come if we have business to finance. That's part of the problem. Okay, Connecticut is growing slowly. And I don't think that it's because the banks are in the way. I think it's because part of it is because we're in our own way in Connecticut. I think it's interesting that Connecticut's employment started deviating from the national economy back in 2011, right around the time that we had to digest the better than $3 billion budget deficit reduction. So to me, the problems are big. The problems originate in Washington and in Hartford. So much can be done in both places that will alleviate a lot of these problems.
And just to Chris's point earlier, I want to make clear that our economist from the University of Pennsylvania was the one making the argument that you were talking about before. And the MIT economist that we also heard from briefly was the one that's saying there is systemic discrimination within the unemployment market. So let's go to Mike Pelletier. He's a Connecticut resident. He's experienced long-term unemployment firsthand. He joins us by phone today. Mike, welcome to our show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you.
Mike, what's your story?
Well, I've been out of work for a little over a year now. I worked at Pratt Whitney in East Hartford for just over 31 years and worked on one of the military programs. I got canceled, and they let a bunch of us go at the beginning of December of last year. So, you know, been out there looking, but it's definitely not easy. I thought it would be much easier when this happened. I wasn't too concerned at the time because I figured with my experience there and all those years that I'd be able to pick something up relatively quickly and, you know, in the same field. But that hasn't worked out as easily as I thought it would.
So you're not able to find something in the same field. What are some of the barriers that you're finding? Are people telling you, look, you don't have the right skill set? What do you think the reason is you can't find a job? Just no jobs out there.
Well, the biggest thing working for an aerospace company like that is, you know, when they start cutting and when they're hurting for work, it trickles down to all the other related companies in the area that, you know, typically feed Pratt & Whitney with their work. So it's that trickle-down effect, you know, in that one spectrum of type of work. So that's making that a little bit difficult. You know, you almost have to say, well, I'm going to give up that field and I'm going to have to look for something else. But now, you know, now the age thing comes into effect and, you know, you're not qualified for what they want. You have to have this or that. And, you know, being with one company in one field, I don't have those things.
And we got a tweet from Edward before. He says, long-term unemployment running. It forced my father into early retirement 2 years ago. Benefits ran out. No one wants to hire a man with 30-plus years experience in construction when they can pay half to new workers. This seems like what you're seeing firsthand, Mike. So what do you think? I mean, would unemployment benefits being extended longer by Congress, would this help you in some specific way to get back on your feet, to find a new job? What do you say?
Well, being in the situation that I am and being, you know, right there, yeah, I think, in my opinion, that it helps because there's a lot of reasons, but people need, you know, if you're out actively seeking work, you need to have transportation, you need to have money to, you know, put gas in the car, pay for the car, insurance. You have to be able to keep paying the bills to get out there and actively seek, you know, even have internet access because today, you know, as I'm finding out, the majority of these places do not want to actually see you come into their office with your resume. You know, everything has to be done online. I've gone into places and they say they just basically turn you around and say you got to go home and apply online.
So you got to be paying for internet access, and then sometimes you got to pay to make sure you get yourself there. These are all things that cost money.
Right. If you do get an interview, of course, then you do have to get there, and you know you need to look presentable and. So you do, you know, you have to have the income coming in to help you find these jobs. That's the way I see it.
Well, Mike, first of all, I wish you best of luck in your job search. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us here on Where We Live. I truly appreciate it.
Yep, not a problem. Thank you very much.
John, can I just throw in a really quick thought?
Very quickly, Nick. Go ahead.
Sure. You know, why can't the big think tanks get together and see how we can make extended unemployment benefits a win-win? In other words, why can't they be used to subsidize jobs? Okay, you take a job at lower pay than you're used to, but the unemployment benefits kind of bring you up to a living wage, if it will. Why can't they be married more with search facilities and the like? I know there's some of that. You know, instead, we just kind of throw up our hands. But, you know, we've got a problem, and it needs to be dealt with, listening to your caller.
Well, and what happens is we throw up our hands, and we say we're either going to extend people benefits or not extend people benefits, but either way, they're still in this by themselves, trying to go out there, spend money to find a job. Lynn's in Windsor Locks. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead quickly.
Hi. I've been unemployed basically since 2008. I've had about four different jobs. I've been laid off from each one because the company's closed. And I'm just wondering, do they really think that it'll help to stop the benefits? What are people supposed to do, go on welfare? Isn't that going to make the economy worse?
Well, Lynn, first of all, it's a great question. And Nick Perna, we just have a couple minutes left, but could you address Lynn's question? I mean, if we don't extend unemployment benefits, we don't help people who are trying to continue to find a job, we're going to end up paying somewhere down the line anyway, aren't we?
Well, we are already, because there's been a huge increase in the number of people on Social Security disability. There's been a huge increase in the number of people on food stamps. So, you know, they got to go someplace. I'm not saying that all these increases are warranted, but I think many of them are people who are of the type we've been talking to once they've exhausted all their means.
Let's go quickly to George. George is calling from Windsor. Go ahead, George.
Yes. Pardon my voice. I got a bad cold.
No worries.
But I'm not able to say what I got to say quickly. I'll just say I took extreme umbrage at that guy, that expert analyzer who said extended benefits have a negative effect on job creation. I don't know. I'm 85 years old, supporting a son out of work and a daughter unable to work because of a botched ankle replacement. This guy, he sounds like he's just out of college, got a job, but he's making assessments of life that he never lived. And I just don't like his attitude. I would ask what the heck his life experience was before I even let him talk. And a guy like Mike that was just on there a couple of calls ago has a real-life experience, and the guy's not fit to shine his shoes.
George, first of all, thank you very much for your call, and I hope you feel better, too. Kick that cold. John's in Waterbury. Go ahead, John. You're on Where We Live.
Yeah, I guess my concern is, I guess if you carry that economics person's argument until its logical conclusion, I would argue that companies that can't afford to pay a minimum wage should close, and the market share would be taken up by those companies that can pay a living wage because they're more efficient. My sense is the economists you talk to would be perfectly happy if the United States converted to a third world country where everyone was making 35 cents an hour, and I guess that's my two main points.
Well, John, thank you very much for your phone call. Nick Perna, we just have a minute or so left. Look, this conversation about unemployment and long-term unemployment benefits is happening kind of concurrently in America with a conversation about the minimum wage and a living wage. Can you just talk to us about that for a moment? I mean, do we need to really think about what work is worth here in America and consider that differently?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's two things going on. One of them is that we have an educational system that's increasingly lagging behind much of the rest of the world. And so part of what we're seeing is the fact that people with better educations can do it more cheaply overseas, okay? So we need to address some fundamentals. We keep fighting these battles over things like minimum wage and the like, one, whereas what we're seeing is symptoms of bigger problems, John, okay? Bigger problems that have to do with the tax code, bigger problems that have to do with inadequate education and the like. And that's why when we're dealing with symptoms, you know, any first year med student knows that treating symptoms doesn't get you very, very far. The other thing I would add on minimum wage is, look, if everybody's pay goes up, every employer in the United States pays 25 or 50% more, it's not the same as an individual employer having to pay 50 cents more, okay? Because all your competitors are being faced with the same situation. Sure, you could push the minimum wage up way too high, but, you know, there has to be some sort of floor under which people work, which people stand.
And it's one of the many debates that we'll have moving forward. Nick Perna, economic advisor to Webster Bank, thanks so much for your expertise. Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives produced the program with Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.